From listeners supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, July 8th, 2026. We are back from holiday vacation. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Kanachi Shawa Tuxnusum Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. You may also join us via our live stream on YouTube at kto.org/JPM Live or on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. Today, we have previews of three upcoming events this week here in Juneau Town. First, the 5th Annual Masters Fair, Juneau's Medieval Renaissance Festival. It's this Saturday, July 11th. Then we talk with the Juneau Ghostlight Theater folk about their cabaret this Friday at the Crystal Saloon. And the Juneau Commission on Sustainability is offering another in its series of invisible infrastructure, this time around Juneau's docks and harbors. That's this Thursday, July 9th. Those conversations are coming up this hour on Juneau Afternoon.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Cushtuk U Bill Fawcett. And the word this week is yauk.
Yauk.
That means canoe. And here's a sentence. Where is that canoe going? Let's hear it again.
Yauk.
Canoe. Gunas Chish to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Cushtuk o Ish Bill Fawcett was Slukach Adi and the child of a southern Toshone man who passed away before Bill was born. His mother later married Tsihua Bill Fawcett, who helped raise Bill. He lived on Occoquan Ani and enjoyed working with advanced language learners, helping them answer difficult questions about the language.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juneau at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com, federally insured by NCUA. You are listening to community-supported Juneau Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juneau, 91.7 Juneau Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Sword fighting, archery, costumes, contests, food, and more. It's all on tap this Saturday at the 5th Masters Fair. It's all happening from 11 to 6 p.m. And joining me now is Sorsha Hazelton, who organizes all this madness. Gunathchish Wasiati, how are you today, Sorsha?
I am delightful after that lovely performance by the Celtic Women.
I know, I love that. That's a great song. Great song. Yeah. So fun. Gets us in the mood for it's Ren Fair, classic fair. How do you put it into a genre?
I mean, I think the Ren Fair itself is a genre, and we have an internal timeline that isn't quite in the Renaissance period, so we tend to advertise ourselves as a medieval fair.
Medieval,
because that's okay. Our time period, but Renaissance fair gives you the same idea because most people aren't going for historic accuracy.
Right. So, because I saw on the website, you basically create, it's a fictional sort of town.
We made a fictional village, a fictional hamlet.
And what's it, it's called, what is
it's
it called?
It's called Harrisburg Hamlet.
Harrisburg Hamlet. Mm-hmm. And where did that idea come from?
The founder of the fair is Doug Harris. And so we named it after him, but also Juno's first name was Harrisburg. The two founders of Juno are Joe Juno and Richard Harris.
Okay, right.
So we layered both things. Some of Juno's history, though obviously not far back enough to be medieval.
Right.
And our founder, Doug.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and this is the 5th iteration of the fair.
It is.
That's amazing.
Somehow.
And I know you put a lot of this together yourself. Tell me a little bit about the growth of it, like over those 5 years.
Yeah, it's definitely gotten much bigger. This will definitely be our biggest fair. I know lots of people for the last couple of years have been hoping we'll move to a larger venue. And we looked at several options this year, but we have like some specific requirements. Not everywhere allows you to have swords on the property. So I looked at several, and hopefully we can still maybe next year bump up to a bigger venue that has some different options for us. But yeah, it's definitely bigger. We have more vendors this year than we previously had. We'll have more performers. And definitely just more interest in general. This year it's been easier to get vendors on board earlier than a lot of the times they wait until like 2 weeks before the fair to try to come on board. And I'm a long-term planner. That's very hard for me. But this year it's been a lot better.
Yeah, and yeah.
I appreciate that personally.
How many vendors will you have this year?
We have more than 33 booths this year.
That's great.
Not all solidified, but that I think is the solidified number, and then we might have
some extras,
some more
last minute.
Always, yeah. Luckily we're at the capacity of our venue, so we're getting to the point where we can say no validly.
Right. So this is Saturday, mm-hmm. And it goes from 11 to 6 p.m. And tell me, where is it? How do people get there?
It's at the Masonic Lodge at 9315 Glacier Highway, which is across from the Valley Restaurant in the Valley.
Okay.
We know that a lot of people really like a community event in the Valley. I myself am a Valley girl, and so I don't want to drive to Douglas. I don't want to do it. So we like hosting it in the Valley. So, yeah, it's across from the Valley Restaurant, and we're going to have our fake gates open at 11, and they'll close at 6. And
I love that.
We tried a little bit longer last year. People wanted to be there later, but then people weren't there later. So our vendors were like, what if we scaled it back a bit? So hopefully 11 to 6 should give us a good crowd all day.
It gives the good family time, too, to get everybody out there and doing their thing.
Yep.
It's so funny when people talk about location, because in the grand scheme of things,
it's so small.
It's
so small.
And I moved here back to Alaska. I was out in Los Angeles at the time. But when I have to tell you this funny story. So when I first got here, I went downtown to the old Hearthside Books location. Mm-hmm. And I was in there, and it was one of my first couple days here. And there was a woman, an older woman who was at the counter, and the gentleman who's worked there for years and years and years was helping her out. And he's like, ma'am, we could either special order this for you, or we do have a copy out in the Valley for you if you'd like. And she looked at him and she said, oh, Sonny, I haven't been to the Valley in 12 years.
Mm-hmm. There's definitely, you know, some people don't need to leave Fifth Street. Some people don't need to leave downtown Douglas.
If you got your neighborhood, you got your neighborhood, you know? Mm-hmm. So I get it. I feel it. So yeah. You mentioned vendors, and mm-hmm. there's all kinds of stuff. This is a very family-friendly affair as mm-hmm. well. Tell me a little bit about some of the events. I mentioned sword fighting and archery. And what are we got all going around all that?
The Society for Creative Anachronisms, if you've seen them, they've done a lot in the last couple of weeks around town. They will be doing their sword fighting throughout the day, the various styles of sword fighting that they do. Some years they've let other people try to hit them with swords. Some years they don't. I don't know what their plan is this year. Mm-hmm. The local Amp Guard group does the archery, and they have a booth at the back of the fair where they let you shoot something. They're not real arrows. I don't remember what they are.
But you can hold a bow and
you got the bow and the arrows
run.
And you. I yeah. don't know how many they
but something
do back
safe.
There. But yeah. They shoot into the forest.
Right.
Makes it very the aesthetics are there.
Yeah.
And the Daughters of the New Moon will be performing.
Ooh, fun.
And Theater at Latitude 58 is going to do some Mad Lib Shakespeare sonnets.
Ooh, that's fun.
We have. The SA is doing their chicken fights again. They did chicken fights last year. They're doing chicken fights again this year. They're not chickens. They're people in chicken costumes.
They're people in. I was going to say, tell me a little
they're
bit more
people,
about that.
I didn't see it myself last year when it kind of spontaneously happened, but they do have chicken costumes and were they pulling each other's legs off? I don't know.
Wasn't it last year? Did you not tell me we were going to have dinosaurs too?
There were dragons there.
Dragon
last year.
Costumes.
We had dragon jousters last year.
Okay, okay.
At the very end of the day, it was very hot last year.
Yeah.
So the fans in the dragon costumes were kind of nice. And then our costume contest We have a couple of other performers that are just going to be around as the mood strikes them.
Just like dwelling around the town, performing and doing those things. Is there like a tomato show or anything?
No, we have not used. We've talked about using some like crochet vegetables and getting them wet and letting you throw things at the people in the pillories. But we have not actually done that. We're worried about real violence.
And somebody actually getting hurt. So, this is like, all pretend, everybody. This is all pretend.
We have several pillories. You can lock yourself in there, sort of-ish, but not really. So, you know, maybe. Maybe eventually, but it's not this year.
Right. And you mentioned the costume contest. Can you go into a little more detail about what that's going to involve?
Our costume contest is another thing that happens, and I don't see it. But we generally have anybody who fits within, we have our categories are like an adult costume, a teen costume, a group costume.
Oh, wow.
Kids 6 to 12 and kids 0 to 5, I think, are our five categories.
Okay.
And then anybody who would like to enter the costume contest joins the front of a crowd of people.
Nice.
And then the rounds of applause get louder and louder until we have a winner.
Now, you've mentioned twice that you won't be there to see these things. What are you doing?
I am there, but I'm running around. Let's see. Last year, I manned some of the entry booths.
Okay.
I am making sure that our vendors aren't overheating because some of them don't. I had to like run and set up a tent last year because it was way hotter than anybody expected it to be. I'm finding fans. I'm changing trash cans. Normal event
organizer
stuff.
Is really interesting because I feel like sometimes the person who's most interested in the thing and who helps get it all together spends more time doing these organizer things than getting to have a little bit of fun. Is it like, it's like, you know, when mom has to cook all the food and is over there getting the last of the bits, right? So it's like, do you get a chance to like, hey, say, I'm going to take an hour and just kind of take it all in?
Oh, no. an hour is such a long time. I try to wander through everything fairly regularly to just check in with everybody. I also like, I try to make sure if anybody's got limited amounts of anything because all of our vendors only have a limited supply of whatever they've brought with them. I do feel bad if I'm like, oh, well, if I go and participate, then there's less for someone else.
I see.
I do feel that, even though I know it's maybe not entirely valid.
Right.
But yeah, it is fun to just sit and kind of watch on slow moments at the entry booth. But yeah, I don't really wander as I assume our attendees, our little villagers do. Oh, well, that needs fixing and that door shouldn't be open. And
right, of course, yeah. And I know you have a website, mastersfair.com. Mm-hmm. That's mastersfair, fair with an E at the end of it, .com. Or you also have a Facebook page, JNU Masters Fair. If you just search for that, you'll find the event on there, I'm sure.
Yep.
Okay. And when did you first start getting into Ren fairs and medieval fairs? When was that for you?
I have always had an interest in history in a variety of different periods of time. And so when Doug proposed a Ren fair, I was very interested and I was in the first group of planners. And then it had its own hiccups and Doug had some health issues. And so it didn't happen in the year that he initially planned, which was 2018, I think. But they're super cool events. Even ours, I know ours is small in the grand scheme of Ren fairs. But it is a cool magical day in Juneau when it's a bunch of nerds nerding out in a variety of ways. Vendors doing things that they love to do and sharing the crafts that they do. Everybody in their cute little costumes, just having a good time. Like it is a magical little several hours of the year.
And do you change your costume every year?
I do.
What are you looking at this year?
Well, I am 85-ish% of the way through sewing my costume.
In addition to everything else that you're doing?
And maybe it's done by Saturday, maybe it's not. And I have to reuse some pieces, but probably not exactly the same pieces I've worn before.
Right.
I'm hoping that this year I can maybe wear pants. And that will be I'll have a little bit more agility because I tend to wear skirts and dresses that better fit the period. So hopefully it'll be a little bit cooler.
That's nice.
And I'll wear pants.
Nice. Now, is there admission for this? Do I need a ticket? How do I go about doing all of that?
We do have tickets at the door. They're you know, virtual tickets or whatever. And we do hand stamps so that you can come and go all day. Tickets are $5 for an adult. No, $10 for an adult and $5 for a child not in costume. And we have roughly half off tickets in your own costume.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Because we really want people to be in costume. Costumes make the event. A Ren Faire is all about vibes.
Now, if I want to make a costume, but I'm, you know, 3 days away from the medieval fair, what do you recommend? Let's say I have a bevy of children.
Everything
I'm
wearing is thrifted.
Thrifted. So thrifting is the best way.
Anything. I have thrifted many pieces in town at a variety of places. But yeah, I mean, there's plenty of inspiration out there for something that's super simple because they're not complicated dressers in the medieval era.
Right.
The Renaissance dressers are much more complicated. And, you know, that's plenty of people could probably pull those costumes off. But, you know, Ren Faires also love a fairy or a mermaid. Or you know, it's not historically accurate, we assume. I'm not saying mermaids aren't real. I would never say that. but, you know, the medieval period is really simple dressing. So
none of those, like, you know, corsets and
Corsets don't come around till later. They have, you know, earlier styles. But
so more you can be more comfortable.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes, but I guess especially if you go like the peasant route, then you can really
peasants love being comfy.
Yeah, that's that. I mean, you just throw a bag on.
just carry around a sack of potatoes with whatever you'd like to wear, and you're good to go.
I love it. That's so cool. Yeah. This is the fifth version of the Master's Fair. It's happening this Saturday from 11 to 6. Give us the location one more time.
It's at 9315 Glacier Highway across from the Valley Restaurant.
Easy peasy place to find it. And you can go to mastersfair.com to get more information. You can see like the history and stuff. Talk about Harrisburg. Harrisburg?
Harrisburg, but it doesn't come up at the fair.
It doesn't come up?
Yeah, no.
Oh.
It doesn't come up.
I mean, I'd be like, where are you from? I'd be like, I'm from Harrisburg.
Feel free to play a character. I'm really bad at improv. I cannot do it.
Plus, you can't improv because you got operational things to be working
on. Yeah, I'm thinking about dumpsters. It's real boring.
Don't mess with Sorsha on Saturday. That's all I'm saying. She might fire breathe on you or something. Don't do it. Well, Gunnar the Cheese, for being here. I really appreciate it. You can find it on Facebook as well under Juno Masters Fair. It's this Saturday. Get out, have some fun, bring the family, do all the things. It's so cool. And are you planning already to think about, I mean, is it too early to think about next year?
I mean, I think about next year only, and whatever doesn't get done by Saturday has to wait for next year.
Right.
And then I'll think about it a lot for a week, and then I'll try to not think about it for a while.
I love that. That's so good. Thank you so much, Sorsha. I really appreciate you being here. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We're going to take a listen to this week's Our Living Lands from Native Voice One.
This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Jill Freitas. A new University of Arizona study found that American Indians operate 62% of farms in Arizona and manage more than 80% of the state's total agricultural land. But those farmers are still not getting the recognition or resources they need. Michael Kotutwa Johnson is a Hopi dry farmer and a co-author of the study. KJZZ's Lauren Gilger spoke with Kotutwa Johnson about the findings and the future of indigenous agriculture.
62% of all the farms in the state operated by Native Americans, 81% of the state's total agricultural land, tribal land. I mean, this is a massive footprint. And I wonder, like, how did we not know this before? Were you surprised by these results?
I was very surprised. But, you know, it's not too surprising because, you know, tribes, the 22 federally recognized tribes in Arizona sit on about a fourth of the acreage of land in Arizona. So that's pretty much what it is. But like I said, I don't think people really understand the agricultural imprint and footprint that we have here in Arizona and have since almost like to say time immemorial.
I've been out to your farm on the reservation, interviewed you about your work there and watched how you do this kind of amazing thing, growing this crop with almost no water sometimes, whatever comes down from the sky. And it's got this long cultural history that it is rooted to. So, I mean, obviously that's part of your motivation here and part of what you're trying to do with not just this study, but with your entire body of work, right?
Yes, it is. You know, my big body of work work is called The Revitalization of the American Indian Food System. And why is that so important? Because, you know, you have one reservation here that has about an 80% diabetic rate, which is the biggest in the globe. And you also have another one, which I saw congressional testimony on, that the life expectancy rate is only 52 years old. So you combine those two factors in the health of the people. It's one of the reasons why I like this study, because it brings all the data necessary so that we can maybe get a bigger part of the pie, not necessarily all for economic gain, but turn the health numbers of our people around so that they have a long life expectancy and rate and not such high rates of diabetes and heart disease.
Yeah, yeah. And it, you're debunking this idea that tribal agriculture, or I guess tribal economy in general, is not having any kind of economic impact on the state. Like, it's in fact having a very big one, it seems.
Yes, it is. You know, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, the Farm Bureau first kind of brought attention to some of these numbers, and they're a very good outfit. But, you know, the state's Department of Agriculture also should pay attention to this, because, you know, when we talk about money, we heard about there's a $3 billion agricultural industry in Yuma. We've always been here, and it's just sometimes we need a little bit more recognition than what we're currently seeing for our agricultural ventures.
When you look toward the future of Native American agriculture in the state, it looks like, I mean, you're anticipating it to be an even bigger part of the pie. Does that have to do with big ag? Does that have to do with tribal water rights?
Well, a lot of it has to do with tribal water rights. You know, tribal water rights under one of the agreements, some of the tribes in southern Arizona are actually allowed 60% of the CAP. They're allowed to utilize that much, but they don't. I think it's more about what farmers can do and cannot do with a limited amount of water supply, especially now that we have the lower and upper basin negotiating for new allocations and new water rights that's well underway.
So, I mean, the study, you say you want it to serve as a baseline going forward. What do you hope for the future in terms of research in this area?
Well, it's not so much the research, it's just more the participation. You know, whether you know this or not, we have this thing called the Federally Recognized Tribal Extension Program. It's a 4-year program every year that allows us to put tribal agricultural extension agents, kind of like my job, on the various reservations. But we only have 5 out of the 22. And these people are key in order to start like community gardens, to help find the needs of the tribe, to start programs that would help with tribal agriculture. But I would sure like to find a way that the state could step in and also allocate funds, because look how much we're helping the state, not only in our agricultural revenues, but our gaming revenues in water that we're helping with municipalities that are paying near to nothing for accessing tribal water. So we need to figure out a best way to not only help their community, but also help the tribal community. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most important thing.
All right. Dr. Michael Kotutwa Johnson, a Dry Hopi farmer, co-author on this study, as well as assistant professor and cooperative extension specialist of indigenous resilience at the University of Arizona, joining us. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Tune in next week for more stories about how climate change affects tribal communities. I'm Jill Freitas for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
Hanson Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, where Kashuk are ye tin. Jin katka ke jin ta khanakhaya ha anikakh gunish cheese.
A little bit of Little Shop of Horrors. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Hungry, but also want to hear some tunes while you eat. Well, Juno Ghostlight Theater is presenting their Feast for Your Ears Cabaret this Friday at the Crystal Saloon. A treat of a specialty menu and a bevy of your favorite performers is what's in store. And here to tell us more is Annie Goodenough. Good cheese, Wasit. How are you today, Annie?
Oh, I'm so excited to be here on Juno Afternoon. Big fan.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And Wendy Burns, welcome back to the show. Good cheese.
Thanks for having us, Boston. Stoked to be back.
Of course. So I was looking at this flyer, first of all, is amazing. You've probably seen it around town. It's a Pizza Head. So who did the poster for you?
Yeah, so my husband, Andrew Sutliff, put that together for us, and he had so much fun drawing it. He's done a bunch of art around town, kind of recently recognizably on the Devil's Club beer cans.
Yeah, oh, nice. Shows at Alaska Robotics and stuff. Yeah.
Okay. He has a lot of funky art around town. But yeah, he was really, he had a lot of different ideas, but the Pizza Head was Wendy and I's favorite.
He made a few different mock-ups for us, and we were both like, that one. Also, they're all so cool, but that one.
Right, yeah, they're so fun. Now, this is Friday night, July 10th at 7 o'clock. It's going to be at the Crystal Saloon.
Very civilized hour.
Yeah, so that's not bad. So tell me, Wendy, how did this version of the cabaret, because you all have been doing these once or twice a year, it feels like.
Yeah, we've done a lot of these over the years. We have a few, like our mixed cast, that have kind of become staples, and we all, I think, sort of have a running list of some types of shows that would be fun to put on at some point. This is Annie's first cabaret she's produced, and Annie's a good friend of mine. So we sat down and she shared a bunch of her ideas with me, and she had just so many amazing ideas. And we kind of put our heads together and came up with a few themes that we were really vibing with, and we brought them to the rest of the board. And the board was like, ooh, yeah, food. We love food. Who doesn't love food? And so we had kind of compiled a vague set list of songs about food, predominantly for musical theater, although there's some extra little fun specials that may draw from other genres mixed in there.
Okay.
And then we approached the Crystal, and this idea was born.
And that's awesome. So, Annie, how's it been producing your first cabaret?
It's been really fun flying next to Wendy here. She's the real pro, showing me the ropes. And, yeah, getting to know the process, getting to know all the different singers and artists around town and everybody that gets involved to make this actually happen. Just for, you know, a few hours on a Friday in July involves a lot of effort from people far and wide. So it's been great seeing that happen and being a part of that process.
Now, Wendy said this is your first cabaret.
As a producer.
Okay. So you've been performing in the cabarets previous.
Yeah. We did the April Fool's Cabaret a couple years ago, and I was in the most recent mixed cast.
And what made you feel like you wanted to jump the ropes and go behind the scenes and produce?
Well, I was really encouraged by Wendy to join the board. They had lost a board member, and they were looking for some more folks to get involved. And I'm always just kind of like, oh, I want to be involved, but I don't know. But Wendy really helped me to get the confidence to join the board and, you know.
We really lucked out. Annie's the best.
carrot on a stick, right? For sure. Carrot on the stick.
I can be very influential, Boston.
Yeah. Now, there's going to be some tasty treats, a specialty menu. Can you tell me a little bit about this?
Yeah. So, you know, food is available for purchase, and we have collaborated with the Crystal to kind of rewrite their menu as well as put a couple sort of specials. So you'll find a lot of menu favorites have been renamed or revitalized to be uniquely relevant to musical theater for this event.
I see.
As well as a few specials that are specifically related to some of the songs that we're singing. Do you want to talk about any of those?
Yeah, well, my favorite is the Snoopy's Supper Time Skewers that are coming together. Everyone loves a little alliteration.
Yeah.
And we just had so much fun putting together the menu. I feel like we were sitting in the Crystal, like brainstorming different musicals and just coming up with the silliest ideas for the names of certain menu items. So if you're a regular of the Crystal, you might see some items that have been tweaked slightly. And if you're a real musical theater fan, you'll have a lot of fun dissecting the menu while you're, you know, in between the intermission or whatever, trying to figure, oh, yeah, that's that lyric
from
that musical.
There's some deep
cuts in there. There's some deep cuts, some easy ones, and some deep cuts for those fans.
Maybe there should be a prize if somebody can figure it all out.
Ooh, that's fun.
Whoa.
I kind of like that.
Yeah,
most menu references gathered.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's super fun.
Especially if there's some deep cuts in there. That's kind of fun. So tell me, are you also performing, Annie?
I am, yeah.
Okay, and what are you going to be singing? Can you give it away?
I guess so. Why not? There's a play called Ordinary Days, a small show, and there's a song in it that myself and Dane Moorhead are going to be duetting to, and it's called Fine. And it's basically a song about a couple on their way to a dinner party, and it's about like, oh, like the making the right wine choice, but maybe not that wine choice, and there's a little bit of a spat along the way. So it provides a little color to the show. And we have some great group numbers. I don't want to give away the group numbers, but There will be an exciting opportunity during intermission for folks to get involved in a raffle. And that raffle, you can put your own name in the raffle, or you can volunteer your friend's name in the raffle to be chosen during intermission so that you may be involved in the group number opening the second act from new musical that I won't give away because I want to keep it a secret, but it's going to be really fun.
So now, Wendy, a lot of times these cabarets are fundraisers for Juno Ghostlight Theater to fund something that's coming up. Is this the similar situation here?
Yeah, our fall production, which Annie is actually also going to be in, is called Witches in Salem. And it's a...
Isn't that witches?
It is witches in Salem. Thank you, Boston, holding me accountable to that. Very important, the delivery. There's a lot of punctuation in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that will be happening in November.
First 3 weekends of November.
Year. And so this is to kind of build a little bit of hype for that and, yep, definitely help raise some funds to help us bring another great show. Especially one with some great historical relevance as well as wonderful comedic timing to Juno for the fall.
And Wendy, I'm assuming you are on this list of performers as well.
I am. I just love it too much.
What are you singing?
I am singing a song from a older musical, Golden Age musical, called She Loves Me, called Vanilla Ice Cream.
Ooh,
As well as a fun little duet slash group number that you will hear at the end of our program that I'll also let be a surprise.
Awesome. And then why don't you shout out the other performers who are going to be working with y'all this Friday?
Yeah, so in addition to Wendy and myself, we have Colton Welch, Stephen Ahrens. I'm sorry. I should have practiced this. Heather Mountcastle, Grace Ann Trombley, Dane Moorhead, Stacey Katass, Kelsey Bryce Riker will be our MC. And we have the magical Luke Weld on the keys to support us. And we love Luke. He is the best.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great group of people right there. And, of course, Juno's MC, Kelsey Bryce Riker.
Juno's MC.
Can't beat it. And this is Friday night, July 10th at the Crystal Saloon. The doors open at 6:30. And where do I get more information or tickets, Wendy?
Yeah, more information and tickets, you can find it on our website, which is junoghostlight.org. You can also find it on the Crystal Saloon's website. You can also find it on our Juno Ghostlight Theater Facebook page. Mm-hmm. So all of those will have links to tickets. At many of our downtown and valley businesses, you can also find posters. So lots of places to get a little bit more information. But in immediacy, I'd recommend our website, the Crystal's website, as well as Facebook.
Sweet. I love that.
Or this take a chance and come at the door.
You could come at the door. Actually, why not, right? It's a night of musical theater featuring songs about food. I can't wait to see the group numbers, too. That would be kind of fun, I'm sure. Did you get out, the spaghetti... Like the spaghetti string and...
We definitely have three different numbers that feature everyone, and they are a wide breadth of musical theater. We hit some classics and some totally new off-the-wall stuff that you might not have heard before.
Can you add in something for me? Can you throw cheese on a baby's head? That would be kind of
fun. I don't
think
there's going to be a lot of babies at the Crystal Saloon. I think that's the big problem.
No, somebody could be a baby and then, throw... Have you seen those videos? You haven't seen those? Like if a baby's crying, you see these parents, they throw a slice of cheese and it hits the baby in the head and then they go, and they stop crying.
I mean, I'm not a baby and I'd still love that.
Wow. I mean, that sounds relaxing.
I'd be like, grab the cheese, start eating on it, so good. I love food. I love singing. This is a perfect event. It is this Friday night. It's the Feast for Your Ears Cabaret presented by Juno Ghostlight Theater as a fundraiser for their fall production featuring all your favorite performers and more. It's this Friday night, 7 p.m. Go get tickets at junoghostlight.com. Thank you so much for being here, Wendy. Annie, I really appreciate you. Gunath Cheesh.
We appreciate you, Boston.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juneau Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. When Hurricane Helene hit North Carolina in 2024, some areas got over a foot of rain. In Craigtown, a small community in the western part of the state, this downpour caused a river of mud to rush downhill into town, destroying homes and killing over a dozen people. As climate change causes more extreme rain in many parts of the country, the threat of devastating landslides like this could grow. Heavy storms can saturate the soil on hills and mountains until water, mud, and debris come tumbling down. And other climate change impacts can raise the risks, too. For example, severe wildfires leave ground burned and barren, with few plants to hold the soil in place and absorb water. So when rain hits, water, dirt, and debris can suddenly rush down a mountain. And in northern regions, warming temperatures are melting glaciers and frozen ground, destabilizing mountain slopes. Many landslides strike suddenly, leaving little time to escape, so it's crucial to plan ahead. Learn about your area's landslide risk, sign up for emergency alerts, and have a go bag ready so you can stay safe if disaster strikes and you need to evacuate. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You are listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. The Juneau Commission on Sustainability continues its invisible infrastructure tours this Thursday with Juneau's Docks and Harbors out at Auk Bay this Thursday, July 9th at 3 p.m. That's tomorrow.
That's right.
And here from the commission is friend of the show, an awesome person all around, Marion Call. Gunachish, welcome in. How are you? Wasiati.
Gunachish, Boston. It's good to be here.
Thank you so much. So you don't do just one thing. You do everything.
I don't know. Many things.
Including being on the Juneau Commission for Sustainability. How did you get involved in that?
Listen, anyone can be a city commissioner. There's a bunch of civilian commissions, just like all of us commoners, if we want to. We can go sign up to be on a commission, and then we can advise the city on a specific topic. Like, we have a local commission on human rights. We have a commission on sustainability. Our job is kind of keeping an eye on sustainability issues and advising the city, giving them a little push, giving them a nudge, helping them set priorities, talking to them about the priorities, right? And, you know, we don't have any control, but we do have the ability to kind of learn a little more and say a little more than our assembly members might have time to, right? And we have subject matter experts who sometimes join, like people who have some kind of environmental science specific knowledge, you know. And one of the other roles that JCOS plays is in kind of community, just public education opportunities for people to learn about sustainability issues. So, like, we host dialogues on, like, food sustainability and on, like, cruise ship impacts and emissions and the landfill, right? So there are all those things, like, people want to know about. And we try and create opportunities for experts to talk to people about them. So in the summertime, we learned nobody wants to come indoors for one of those learning sessions. And so we decided to start doing outdoor field trips see Juneau's actual infrastructure, to actually go, you know, that piece of something that you've always wondered how it worked, or you just never thought about it before. Mm-hmm. Go learn how that actually works. So we have several field trips lined up this summer, and this is the first one tomorrow.
Yeah, and you've done a few of these in the past, for sure. It's a great opportunity to see different places and different opportunities to see things, buildings or places that you would probably never go as a citizen of normal time. So this week, you're doing the docks and harbors out at Auk Bay. Tell me a little bit about what's going to be happening tomorrow.
So that's a walk and talk with the harbor master.
Okay.
And I'm actually kind of excited. I don't know anything about this. I'm not a boat owner, but I know that tons and tons of Junoites interact with our with the ocean, with our maritime culture, with the lakes. And the city has some specific responsibilities when it comes to our docks and harbors. And also there's other things that are not up to them, right? Mm. And I'm kind of excited to learn about this. This will be my first time going down and learning like what is up to the like city employees, what happens when a boat sinks. We had a lot of boats sink during Snowmageddon, right? And I part of why we scheduled this was because people were asking, well, what happens? Whose job is it? What happens when there's, you know, fuel in the water or other substances? How do we take care of that? And how do we keep the folks who live down on the dock safe, you know, the folks who are live aboard and seasonal folks, you know, all of that. Just so I'm kind of excited. So
yeah, I walk around there often. You
yeah,
know,
me
it's a
too.
Great, I don't live. I live on this side of town, but I sometimes, you know, my partner and I, we'll go. Let's go out to there, and we just walk around.
Oh yeah, any of the docks in Douglas or downtown or at Auk Bay, or you know, like walking the docks is so nice.
It's so fun.
But I don't know anything about them.
I know zero.
Yeah, and there's people who do. So and even for folks who know a bit, like I think it's good to understand like what's the difference between the cities and the state's responsibility or other agencies. Who do you call? What do we fund, and how is that like? Is that going well? Like all these questions that people have,
come. Can they tell us who the billionaires are on those boats that are out there?
Just check Blue Sky. There's a gossip chain about
it.
Yeah, there's a gossip chain.
There was a big one out there the other day. We were driving by. I was like, whoa, that was a giant one.
Yeah,
it was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But it's so cool,
Yeah, it's really cool. And so it's basically you just come down to Stater Harbor, Auk Bay. We meet by the harbor master's office, bring your walking shoes, dressed for whatever weather we get. And like then we do, just kind of a walk and talk from 3 to 5. And it's open to anybody. I think the posters say you should RSVP, but you do not have to RSVP. You can just show up.
Okay.
I realize it's a 3 to 5 p.m., which is an afternoon thing. But hey, bring the kids. It's summertime. Come on down, hang out on the docks. And next one, we have another one coming up on July 23rd.
Okay.
And that one is, have you ever walked the Flume Trail and you wonder what all those little tiny buildings are along the way?
Okay.
Right? Like, why is this kind of like secret shed here that I'm not allowed in that's making a lot of noise? We did this last year where we walked the Flume Trail with some AELMP folks who could answer all our questions about and tell
haunted?
Us about the power generation.
Are they haunted?
I did not ask that last time. I will ask this time.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, we should find out. It is amazing to go in there and actually see what powers Juno and talk about. Talk about the hydro infrastructure, not just what we saw, but also the rest of it that, you know, we're very lucky to have hydropower in Juneau as supporting a lot of our daily life and how to sustain that and how to keep that infrastructure healthy and paid for. How are rates set? Why are rates set? You know, like time and space to ask those questions and to understand how we keep that infrastructure healthy. That's the funny thing about infrastructure. When it's working, you don't think about it, right?
Yeah.
The second you start thinking about infrastructure, that means something's gone wrong. So my pitch to all of you is let's kind of like learn about and think about our infrastructure before something goes wrong so that A, so we can appreciate it, B, so we can monitor it for accountability to understand what's working and what's not. See to make decisions about it as a community. It starts with a field trip. Starts with kind of like, you know, Sesame Street, ABCs, go learn the basics. So,
well, you said, your title, Invisible Infrastructure, it's like making the invisible visible.
That's
right?
What
it's
it is.
It's like getting yourself out there and understanding, you know, what is actually powering the town.
Oh, yeah. The number of people who work so that we get to have power, wastewater, like so that we have clean water in our taps and so that we don't have sewage backups. Like the amount of labor and expertise that takes is just astounding.
Yeah.
And so starting to see it and appreciate like what's involved in those jobs, why we have those jobs and who does them, Like, that is really exciting and really fun. So yeah. you're invited. Come on down.
I'll be busy tomorrow at 3.
Well, but... I know you're busy tomorrow at 3, Boston, but can't you record it at 7 and broadcast at 3? Yeah, go back in
that
time?
That would be fun to reverse it. That would be great.
Yeah.
Now, you anybody can go.
Anybody can go. Kids,
just show up.
Kids are fine, right? As long as they won't jump off, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then you want to make sure that you dress for the weather. Absolutely mm-hmm. want to do that.
And I think it's going to be low tide, so it is going to be a bit of a steep ramp okay. up and down.
Okay.
So just have the kind of shoes where you're not going to, you know, yeah. take a tumble.
And how do you all decide on what pieces you want mm-hmm. to sort of tour? Is this something that you as the people on the commission kind of think, oh, that would be a great thing to look through? That would be a great thing. You're doing the yeah. flume again because that was kind of cool. And really
yeah, only about 15 people could come. Yeah. So now we can get a different 15 people. Yeah. Everyone who came had a great time. And the yeah. wastewater treatment plant going to yeah. happen later in the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That was one of the coolest things I've ever done. I got a pitch for that because it was amazing. But we respond to community curiosity and we also reach out to places and see who has a little bit of capacity to take an hour or two and show people around. So some of our sessions later in the year, we're going to go visit the Tlingit and Haida solid waste facility, the new kind of like in vessel compost site in Lemon Creek, right? So we're going to go get a tour of that a little later in the summer and then go to the wastewater treatment plant. That's planned for August 20th, might change depending on flood, right? Because like they're heavily impacted by the flood impacts and the work that they have to do depends on that. Mm. But for now, it's scheduled August 20th and we'll move it if we have to. You can check these events will show up at facebook.com/sustainablejuno. That's Juno Commission on Sustainability's Facebook page.
That's where you
page.
Post all the stuff.
That's where we post the stuff. You can see the most recent entry there is tomorrow's event if you want any details. So again, that's tomorrow, 3 o'clock, Stadter Harbor. Just to walk around with the Harbor Master, learning what the city's involvement is in our docks and harbors and how we take good care of them.
I love that. And what last question, Mary, and I'm just yeah. curious. So you decide, I want to know about when you decide to say, I want this, because there's so many, like you said, I have the Juno Commission on Aging people here all the time. I have different mm-hmm. people come in. Why do you choose to work on this one? What is it about it that sort of
Commission on Sustainability?
Yeah.
Almost everyone else on the commission has some sort of like science or policy background. Uh-huh. And then I'm the artist, right?
I see.
So
yeah, yeah.
I'm the musician on the commission. But I think it's good to be there because maybe part of being an artist for me is zooming way out and trying to see the big picture culturally and in terms of our species, the human race. Mm. And that perspective has always led me back to sustainability and what we have to do to be stewards of the place where we are, in line with values that come to us from generations and generations and generations, including the generations right here.
Yeah.
And being a decent steward means partially just starting the kind of like slow administrative spreadsheety work of like learning basic things like what are our emissions like and how would we reduce them? What's the situation with the landfill and what is the future of our solid waste and how do we decide that fairly as a community? How is our wastewater managed and like what expenses are going to come for us in the future there so that we make sure we have like an appropriate models for like taking care of Juno without leaving a footprint here that damages. I mean, and the fact is that people leave a footprint, people leave a big footprint. And I'm really interested in how we can change, how we can adapt to coexist better with the space around us. And I feel lucky to live in a place like Juno where a lot of people are aligned with that idea. So, but when it comes down to the nuts and bolts, like learning what can happen, who's doing it, who's advocating for it, like that's been really educational to understand city workings a little better.
And how much, for those who might be interested in like mm-hmm. getting involved in a commission, like you said, anybody can do it pretty much. How much time does it take? How much of your effort, you know, hours per week or whatever you want to say about that? Like, what does it take to be a commissioner?
You put in an application. You have to kind of show an earnest interest and you put in an application. They're available on the CBJ website, juno.org. Is that it?
Juno.org. Juno.gov.
Juno.gov. Oh, sorry. It was the tail end there that was tripping me up.
And different commissions have different time commitments. Ours is usually just a couple hours a month.
Okay.
And right now, because we have these field trips, or when we have, for example, a community learning session, like we had one on garbage bears the other year that was really fun. some folks in from Ketchikan to tell us what they're doing down there, you
right,
know, just
right.
like get the skinny on what we can do and what's happening and why.
Yeah.
When we have one of those, we have a little bit more time that we commit to setting up the event and to doing outreach on it. And then it is showing up and being there. And it's kind of an excuse for us to learn what we want to learn, too. So like this summer, we have two events a month. And so it's a little bit more commitment, but it's optional. And not everyone on the commission does everything. I'm the vice chair, so I'm pretty involved. And Griffin Plush, our chair, is also pretty involved. But we have a bunch of members who just care about sustainability. And during the winter, we kind of try to dig in on learning about issues like the Cascade Point and like the road modifications that might be needed for the mines, or about like the waste stream study we just did to understand what's going into our landfill and what our next move is, like a landfill, another incinerator, where that landfill would be, transfer station, you know, like all those steps, because our landfill is nearly full and we do have to make decisions about that soon. So how do we make good decisions that are informed as a community? We have sessions, we try and learn about that stuff. Cruise ship emissions, all that, you know.
That's cool.
So we just have learning sessions in the winter. We inform the assembly about what we think Juno's priorities ought to be for things like the comprehensive plan.
Mm-hmm, right.
And yeah, it's been great being on the commission. And we actually have a seat or two open right now. So if that sounds interesting to you, especially if you have kind of a science or environmental work background, then applications are open at juno.gov.
But first, go tomorrow.
But first,
3
yeah.
o'clock tomorrow, July 9th, Juno Docks and Harbors out at Auk Bay. Meet
right.
at the Harbor Master's office. Take a little tour around. Get your questions answered. And hopefully you get some nice weather tomorrow. It'll be nice out there.
I would love to, although honestly, docks in the rain make me happy too.
I know.
It feels good, doesn't it?
It's like the perfect place to walk in the rain is on the docks.
The docks are so great. Plus, we can go to Firetap after. Save the date. If tomorrow's not going to work for you, save the date. July 23rd is when we have our walking tour of the Flume Trail. And we have, I think, a limited number of spaces for that. It's about 15, okay. 16. So there might be an email RSVP or a simple form for that. Again, where you can find out about that, next July 23rd engagement is going to be on facebook.com/sustainablejuno. So follow that page and you'll be advised of events.
And Marion, come back later about the August events. It'd be great to hear those.
Will, for sure.
Gwyneth Cheese for being here today. This is Juno Afternoon on KTO. We'll go out with a little Rain Dogs with a song from their upcoming album they performed live here in the studio. This is called Company of Nothing.
If I moved across the country, would you move with me? If I moved right back, would you stay? How do I tell you I'm falling out of love with myself, and that you don't taste quite as sweet as you used to? But maybe nothing does. Nothing might be sweeter than you. Maybe nothing does. Nothing might be sweeter than you, like being alone, like looking up tree trunks, holding granite chunks, waiting in cold water, waiting to die in love. Oh, to die in love with the company I'll never know. Craving company of no one, with the company I'll never know. Craving company of nothing. Oh, to die in love. Oh, to die in love. Oh, did I in love, in love, in love. Would you go to church? when I'm not around. Would you pray to God that nothing has me now? I hope to be happy with nothing on my own, craving the company of things I've never known. I hope to go to church to burn the whole thing down. I hope to find nothing standing on its own. How do I tell you I'm falling out of love with myself, and that you don't taste quite as sweet as you used to? How do I tell you?
That's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we take a look at the Bridge Adult Day Program and the Wander the Wetlands event this weekend with Southeast Alaska Land Trust. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Ok Bay 91.7. You can find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. Support comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, Hanson Grass, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Country Financial. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis. Gwyneth Cheesh, have a fantastic Wednesday. Oh.